This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's Tech Talk, and it's the first Thursday of the month. Karmjit Singh from Digital News Asia has graced his presence here in the studio. Welcome, Karam.
Thank you.
We're going to get straight into it. You wrote the story on Kylie Ng expected to do more good things from his new $50 million US fund that will be led by MAFCAP as the lead investor. So, but you started by saying he's having a bad day despite all the global headlines.
Yeah. So when I called him the day before, I had a missed call from him. And then when a series of quick messages from him explained, hey, you know, somebody broke the embargo. And then I just gave him a call. And he say, hey, man, I'm really sorry, but, you know, one of the media broke. It's more a blog site broke the embargo. And they didn't see that it's, you know, I think they put down 9 a.m. Pacific time. And then you kind of think it's 9 a.m. KL time, right? KL Singapore time. And as a result of that, he actually lost a very good feature that the international media was writing, you know, profiling the fund and you know, 500 startups and Kylie's role in them. So say, hey, the story's already old now. It's already out there, right? Mm. Can you imagine we live in a day where a story comes out and within an hour and a half, you think it's kind of old news.
Yeah, you know, tough. I don't know whether that still works, this whole embargo thing. I think maybe also to be very specific, 9 a.m. Pacific time, 9 a.m. Malaysian
correct.
Time. You know, I think, we could...
9 a.m. Because 9 a.m., if you put 9 a.m., then, you know, okay. Jakarta comes 9 a.m. is 1 hour after hours. So, you know, that's kind of stuff. But anyway, so he was quite stressed out. And then I said, okay, chill, you know, just tell me what the story is. And, of course, excited about the 50 million durian 500 a Durian 2 fund. So they launched their Durian 1 fund in 2014. And MAFCAP, you know, was, and that's the Malaysian public, right? It's because it's public, government money. It was one of the lead investors in that fund. I mean, they probably gave the single largest sum. And then now for the second round or so, they're leading the fund again. And I sent some question to Jamaluddin Bujang, the CEO, and I said, you know, what's with the interest again in being the main investor for the second fund? And he says that while the first fund is still ongoing, and I think they've made close to 170 investments in total, they meaning, 500 durians. He says that the fund has been going very well in his view. Of course, he's got inside information. NDA, you cannot disclose. So he's very excited at the progress of that fund. And now 500 startups is going to launch another one. He said, hey, you know, this is a good bet for taxpayers' money. I'm going to plonk down another big sum into this fund. So the funding is already what is existing from the allocation from the 11 Malaysia plans. So they're not going and asking for a special allocation. This is money they've been given by the government to already make investments and make some, you know, startup bets or some interesting, you know, technology bets that will bring, you know, benefits to when you sell out. So then I also asked him, but, you know, the ability to sell companies that are promising is very small because corporates in the region don't seem to be buying startups. It's mainly startups maybe being sold to U.S. companies, or you're taking the IPO route, which is very long. Mm. And then I also asked Kylie a question. He said, look, we're still at the very early stage of the ecosystem. Let us play our role. That means 500 startups with a Southeast Asian fund, 500 durians, in just seeding more interesting, you know, seed-level companies. And then when these companies do well, they start getting, you know, Series A, Series B, Series C funding and subsequently move up. And then as you move up higher, at some point, you become interested enough for someone to acquire you, or you may even go for a listing. So he says, we're at the very early stage, Karam, just chill.
Yes.
It will happen. And Jamaluddin is also excited and interested. And it's great that, so this fund will be focused on Southeast Asia, okay, Frida? Although there's Malaysian money being like the single largest chunk, but the bets are, you know, regional. Right? And with the online space, it's just borderless, correct? Mm. So this is kind of an interesting thing for, I think, your listeners to just be aware of, actually. And they can read our story on DNA with some extra information from Jamaluddin and Kylie, or they can just go online and you can read all the other sites that carried the press release.
But the word durian has now gone on a global stage. Huh?
Yeah, man. Yeah,
so,
the aroma of durian.
Let's move on to big data. So that's not enough. So what question at the moment in the big data world is it?
Yeah. So this is interesting because the person who's saying this is not just anyone, right?
Mm.
So this Lutzfinger, his name is kind of interesting. And then, so second name is, of course, then we keep referring to in the article as finger, right? So not the finger, okay, which has different connotations. But I may not use his name henceforth. So he's an interesting guy because he's the director of data science and data engineering for LinkedIn.
Mm.
Okay. So that's a big, you know, internet company. So he's saying this. So he says that, look, we've always been using data for actionable intelligence. And he actually goes back to the time of the Incas. And he said they were already using a rudimentary form of data in terms of observing the sun to help them determine when was the right time to plant their crops. So now, so he says the right question.
Here's the thing, though, before that. They got 2012 wrong. But anyway.
2012 wrong. Yeah, yeah. Hey, by the way, remember a few weeks ago when you nailed me again with Dota, you know, defense of, I went with the aliens, and then you say it's actually the ancients. Yeah. I should have come back with you saying that the ancient Incas believed that aliens were ancients. Okay.
The ancients were aliens.
Yes.
Go on.
Okay. Anyway, so he says that, look, the right question to ask in big data isn't whether you can derive better information from the better intelligence, but rather says, ask if you are asking the right questions in the first place and what you want to achieve with the data. Because he says, analytics, this is interesting. It's how you analyze data hasn't changed much because linear regression is a 200-year-old art, right, or science. Mm. That hasn't changed. So really, what do you want to do with the data? And he says that a lot of organizations need to get this question right and clear of what they want to do with the data. Because he says that there's a lot more data now, right? The depth is huge, but you've also got a lot more tech to help you look at the data. So it doesn't mean that more is better. And then here's the other thing. He says there are a lot of people who are trying to sell you technology which you don't really need. So that's why you must need to know what you want. He said you want to go from A to B, you don't need a Lamborghini, right? Although I know you would like one and you deserve one, probably. Not yet. You may only need a bike. And that's me. So he said, find out what you need, because then you want to then get the tools which are commensurate to the task. Because there's a price to the tools, right? So he said, if a company doesn't know what it needs, it cannot possibly know what tools it needs to achieve that task. So, and he actually wrote a book. He co-authored a book published 2014 called Ask, Learn, Measure. You can go out and buy the book, or you can read Edwin Yap's article, which is about almost 2,000 words, but very interesting, and get a bit of a lowdown, the drill down. On big data analytics and asking the right questions and knowing what you want.
Right. Okay. So which fairy tale is it? Is it Alice in Wonderland or the other one? Where it doesn't matter where you're going, right? If when she says, she's asking for directions and the person said, "Where are you going?" But I don't know.
So, but you don't know.
Right? Yeah. If you don't know where you're going, it really doesn't matter. So you've got to ask the right questions.
Yes.
Then you'll get the right answers.
But you know, everyone who tries to ask those right questions know that it's so hard to ask the right questions, right? I mean, just look at yourself. You ask yourself, what is my purpose in life? That's just a frustrating and beguiling and intimidating question to ask. And ultimately, it can be even depressing.
Oh.
You still don't know what your purpose is on this planet, which is kind of
insane. Yeah, because
it's
sometimes also that statement, I don't know what I don't know.
Yeah.
Right? But let's transition, because it's getting to be like another show. Let's transition smoothly into UEM Group and embarks on a 3-year, $36.3 million US dollar cloud-based ERP journey.
Correct.
Huge.
Huge, yeah. So, and interestingly enough, one of the vendors involved with the deal actually called me, and then I was busy, then messaged me saying, hey, the story you broke last year, because we broke the story last year in June, saying that UEM and even up to the board level were seriously looking at options for how they move, you know, and transform their IT backend to support their business, right, to become more of a co-driver with the business. So that was back then. So this is 18 months later now. At that point, it was about 100, 120 million ringgit budget. Now the budget is actually 150 million. And we use, you know, US dollars in our headlines because, you know, when you're online, you got to go with, you know, the global currency. So it's actually 150 million ringgit, three-year journey. And according to Izzadin Idris Datuk, who's the group CEO and MD of UEM Group, this is, it took them 18 months, you know. And because they wanted to have the best company systems and software providers, you know, to help us with this landmark project. And who are the four that finally they picked was one, Tech Mahindra. Then you've got Oracle Corporation. You've got PwC Consulting. And you've got Ernst & Young. Very interesting. Each one will play a very stringent role in making sure that everyone does what they're supposed to. So that's kind of interesting. So it's a big money. And normally some people only appoint kind of two parties. It's interesting that they've gone with four. They think they're going to get the best value.
And they're all competitors,
Not really. Yeah. PwC doesn't do software. Don't execute. So, and they don't sell software, right? And Ernst & Young also. So they're playing. That's why one of them is playing the project management role, which is PwC.
And these management consultants,
yeah.
with their differing views.
Differing views, yeah. No, so this time they all got to be aligned because this is right from the board level, very interesting. And, you know, according to Izzadin, you know, we need to revolutionize our technology capabilities, right, to enhance the abilities to respond to changes. And he talks about this will able them to achieve higher levels of productivity, transparency, and enhanced collaboration. All those good things that happen when you when your technology is aligned with your vision and with the business mission of the company and it's done well. So this is a very interesting project for everyone to follow, I think.
Okay, we're going to discuss BMW after this. Karamjit Singh from Digital News Asia here with us. It's Tech Talk BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
It's Tech Talk. Karamjit Singh from Digital News Asia here with us. So we had interesting, lots of big money was discussed earlier on. And now we're going to talk about BMW, right? Why do you feel that BMW tying up with Green Tech Malaysia is significant?
I think it actually took on more of a significance because I was at this conference yesterday, an exhibition, the 7th International Green Tech and Eco Products Exhibition and Conference Malaysia, iGEM 2016. It's still ongoing and you can go and check out and there's some amazing hybrid and electric cars there. There are two Teslas there. Can you believe it? Not one, but two.
I've been in one of them.
You've been in one of them. Okay, very rare. Yeah, so the red one or the black one?
I think I was in the...
The purple one. Okay, we want to ask then where this was because there ain't no purple Tesla in Malaysia. Caught you there, Frida. Anyway, moving on smoothly. I was because I spoke to the CEO of Green Tech Malaysia, right? Ahmad Hadri Harris. And while I haven't written the story yet, he said that he feels that the green mobility, right? Green cars and hybrid cars are actually going to be the trigger for more consumers to become part of this green movement. Because he said that when you're actually, because using a car is much more personal. Because I've got solar panels on my roof, right? And I realized that very few of my neighbors have asked me about those 14 panels, you know, sticking plastered onto my roof as to what they do and could they also use it. I think probably 4 or 5 in the last 6 years I've had them on my roof. And it was struck me when he said that he thinks, you know, having people use green cars will help them become more conscious of embedding a green lifestyle into their way of life. And here he is, you know, having a signing ceremony with BMW. And really, BMW has already some green cars in the country, hybrid actually. And what this is going to do is they're going to give access to charging stations, you know, to Green Tech Corp's, Green Tech Malaysia's charging stations across the country. It's called Charge EV Platform. So that's kind of interesting. And for BMW, they said this is just important in strengthening the ecosystem for people to be able to own, you know, green cars, whether it's hybrid or to me, I think an electric car is much more green than a hybrid, right? And in fact, Ahmad Hadri was also encouraging me, Karam, it's time for you to get a green car yourself, electric car. So
Get that Tesla.
At some point, lah.
Okay.
They got to bring the price down quite significantly. But so this is a small step in that, you know, in that direction. So you can read the story for more. But I just wanted to say that cars, you know, will apparently be a trigger point for all of us out there to start adopting a much more, you know, a green lifestyle in all facets.
Okay, so we're covering another big data company, right? This is another significant piece of news with Fusion Next.
Correct.
And I've got here my notes very quickly, Karam.
Okay. No, this is interesting because you've got FusionX is a Malaysian, you know, a big data analytics company listed in the UK. And for them to be, because we normally write and we talk about how multinationals get some components of their, a technology curriculum embedded into the syllabus of universities. And this is, FusionX getting their product called Giant, right, to be incorporated into Asia Pacific University of Technology and Innovation. In Malaysia, we know it as APU lah. Kind of colloquial, into their syllabus. And I thought that's significant. So this will also help train a lot more people in the area of big data and analytics because there's a shortage. And it's just really great news for FusionX, you know, that they've got this, it's going to be part of the curriculum there. And students who are going to APU will have a very relevant, you know, big data foundation, you know, when they come out and they look for jobs in this area. Because it is one of the top 5 jobs still people look for on LinkedIn.
What do you call it? The sexiest job for 20 years.
Whether it's the sexiest now, I know it moves all the time, but it's definitely among the top 5 jobs, lah. So that's great for them, lah. So that's why I just wanted to highlight that very quickly. We can now move on. Okay. I think that's fast enough.
You have a shout out to for Kaki Tangan and Pitch In.
Oh, yeah, Piché. No, that was because that was from, so we're on only once every 2 weeks. So
This
was significant because, and I got scolded for this too by one of the ecosystem leaders, you know, which I found interesting.
40 million US. Go on.
No, not 40 million US. This is 1 million ringgit. So Kaki Tangan is a cloud based, or by the way, the ERP solution that UM Group has picked is also going to be cloud based. And why? For scalability and flexibility, right? So Kaki Tangan offers small companies a payroll and human resource based, you know, system, you know, which is on the cloud, and is targeting smaller companies. A lot of startups actually use their services too. And what has happened is that he's actually looking to raise money, and he decided to use an equity crowdfunding platform, and he decided to pitch in. There are, of course, five more. And I'll run out of time if I repeat all five, but so this is it. And then he picked them, and you know, when you go on an equity crowdfunding platform and you're pitching to the public, really, right, to look at your company, and you give your sales pitch. So he prepared all his material and all, but you go out and also do one-to-one marketing with your own peer group, people you know, look, I'm going to put this up on a platform, and if you think my product is good, you know, if you think what I got is good, but you didn't want to give me the 1 million ringgit I'm asking for, here's a chance to maybe put in 50,000 or 100,000. So he did that marketing in the one-on-one and put it on the site also. And when it went live, lo and behold, within 24 hours, he hit the 1 million ringgit funding he's looking to raise, right? Which is absolutely fantastic. And then they had to stop. So I said before 24 hours, because I don't know whether the 20-hour point or 18-hour point, they just stopped it and say, we already hit our target. We're not taking anymore.
This is a breakthrough for Malaysia.
So I think it's a breakthrough. So there's like 35 investors in total. One of them put in 200,000 significantly. But I thought it was a breakthrough because the speed in which it's achieved, and you know, it's achieved on the equity crowdfunding platform, which, you know, credit to them, the Securities Commission is also pushing. And in my weekend review article, I did say that they wanted to push it because it's one component of their strategy to democratize finance. So even people who are not high net worth individuals can actually put in up to, I think, 5,000 ringgit, you know, a maximum of, you know, to put in and invest in some companies you think are interesting, instead of like buying lots in the company, right? This you're coming in at the IPO level, maybe just like at the pink form level. And then just see how these guys grow. Very interesting. But I got scolded by one of the ecosystem leaders. So I said, Karam, it's clickbaiting your article because you make it seem like it's easy. And I said, no, actually, in the article, I did write that it was his existing customers end up investing in it because they knew the product, they liked it, they were users. But he said, look, nobody reads down into an article. They look at the headline and they judge. And he's already had some of his startups coming to him and say, hey, boss, I want to get on ECF and raise 1 million or 2 million ringgit. And they think it's easy. It's not. I said in the article, I did mention that. Yeah. But fair comment by him that a lot of people just look at the headlines and that's it, right? But we did our part to put it in the article. Because you can't put everything in the headline, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise,
it becomes
a thousand-word headline,
which may be
interesting. I could get into the Malaysian Book of Records. Always wanted that.
But here's the thing. Okay. Of course, you know, you've got to try to appeal people. And if it's a good headline, a good first para, then you continue to read the second and third and fourth para, right?
Yeah. Most people do, but I think this guy, his startups all just saw the headline, you know, raise
that's
1 million ringgit in less
which
than
is a question that
hours.
It's a lesson that you have to teach the startups to read the T's and C's in the fine print.
Correct.
Okay,
reading
list.
So this is significant. Go and read that. Yeah. So reading list, it's an Indonesian story. So you've got...
I know.
Yeah.
But I know you also going... you want me to talk about what you want to talk about in Indonesia, but there are two... Okay, so I know you're going to Indonesia.
Yeah. So no, there's two. So one is... actually, you're right. While our reading list is on Indonesia's big three telcos, they're all looking to win big from data. And of course, Malaysia has interest there because we've got, you know, Axiata, you know, Excel.
Kind of week,
as one of the three companies there. But what's kind of exciting and interesting is that we're going to be producing our What's Next conference in Jakarta in January. And we've, you know, while in Malaysia we've got Accenture as our knowledge partner, we've got IDC as our knowledge partner for What's Next Jakarta. And it's nice because they say that they're partnering with us because they think that DNA represents the new wave of media that's fast growing. And this is from the country head of Jakarta, right? And has quickly become the prime medium for CXOs, right, to obtain the information swiftly and on the go. And he feels that how we produce our news, you know, with credible analytical reporting gels and is synonymous with IDC Indonesia's independent and realistic view of the Indonesian ICT market. And talking about that, they're going to come up with a report soon to say that the ICT market, you know, is not as hot as the government has been making it out to seem, because they've got channel data they're going to introduce.
Which people can read about, but you're going to Indonesia.
Yeah, so I mean, we're already in Indonesia since last year, but now what's next is going to be launching in Indonesia. And, you know, according to Sudev Bangga, the president of the CEO of IDC in Indonesia, Indonesian organizations are still at the beginning curve, right, of their digital adoption. And right now it's very ad hoc and it's still very IT-based rather than digital roadmaps. So they think that the way we produce the conference with brick-and-mortar guys coming and sharing what they're doing is very relevant for Indonesian, you know, brick-and-mortar leaders to listen
to
learn from. It'll be either on the there'll be two dates, lah. We've got the 24th or 27th of January, so we have not picked them. Sorry, the 20th or the 24th. So I'll get back to you on the dates of that.
Right.
But it's just for us, it's exciting to have a world-class, you know, company partnering with us
I
to produce that.
I just want to go to Indonesia to witness all of this.
Oh, and to be to be a provocateur. Yeah, there you go, man.
All right. Thanks for being with us. Karamjit Singh from Digital News Asia. You've been listening to Tech Talk BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.